I'd like now to welcome to the program Göran Hugo Olsson. His new film is called The Black Power Mixtape, 1967 to 1975, and it is screening starting this Thursday at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
So this is a film composed of footage that was made by a team of Swedish filmmakers who went to the United States from 1967 to 1975, and they filmed the Black Power movement. What were they doing there? How did the original project come about?
It wasn't one team. It was several people. It was, you know, the entire crew, not the entire crew, but it was documentary filmmakers and reporters from Swedish television. So this wasn't a project. This was, I had at my hands the entire archive from Sweden, Swedish National Broadcast, to put the film together.
And so, but still, I mean, it remains that a whole team of Swedish broadcasters were very interested in this subject.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the connection started when Dr. King got the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964. That connected Sweden in a way to the civil rights movement. And then the younger generation came around. They picked up the Black Power movement. And Sweden were neutral at the time. This was the peak of the Cold War. So Sweden, and being a very rich country, they decided that they should produce their own media for Swedes. So that's how it came about.
At the time, was Sweden going all over the world? Were they making films and doing news every place?
Yeah, they send out, you know, teams everywhere, to Africa and Latin America. So they wouldn't buy American media so much, or French or British, or God forbid, Soviet Union media, you know. So they decided that they should produce their own, you know, perspective on the world. So they went everywhere. But I think they focused on, not focused, but this was a big issue in Sweden at the time. So.
Why were the people of Sweden so interested in the Black Power movement and Martin Luther King and all of that?
I think Sweden had, you know, we loved American films, American products and so on, but as Europeans, we had a problem with a country, you know, so rich and so big, and being, you know, we are the free, everybody's free. And it was obvious from a Swedish point of view that it wasn't true to all people, you know, in America. And they had problem in understanding how America could be this great country and be so free and home of the brave and so on, and yet have so many poor people, so many underprivileged people coming from specific groups. They had trouble, you know, in understanding that, of course.
Now, how did you come across the footage that you used in this film?
It was both chance and some intuition, because I heard rumors about this footage, and I was in the archive, and I started looking around. So in the basement of the new broadcast company in Sweden, Stockholm, I found this material, and immediately it struck me that, you know, this could be great film. And also I took upon my duty to put it out, because all the material, it's sparkling, bright, and, you know, the great personality of the time. And it's been seen in Sweden once, but never again. So this was something that had to be done.
And what you did was you did something new with it, and that's the part of what is so fascinating about this film. I mean, I think probably a lot of people have seen certainly footage of Martin Luther King speaking, and maybe Stokely Carmichael and Angela Davis and so on. But you also used interviews with African-American scholars and activists and artists of today commenting on what we're seeing. How did you choose them?
I think, first of all, when you have a film of archive material, no matter how great persons you have and, you know, clear and crispy material, you could feel, the audience could feel kind of claustrophobic, like locked in this time and space. So you need to add some oxygen from today in some way. And I didn't want to add pictures and images, but I added contemporary voices to put, you know, some oxygen into this world and also put it in context. We also added contemporary graphic and contemporary music, not to make it nostalgic in any sense. And my co-producer and me, Danny Glover, we talked about this, and we were very, you know, immediately identified that this is great, but we have to put it in some kind of context, not to explain it too much, but, you know, help the audience to interpret it.
What was Danny Glover's role in the film?
First of all, I have to say that this is not a film about the Black Power movement. It's a film about how the Black Power movement was seen upon from a Swedish perspective. So I can't make a film about the Black Power movement. That has to be done with someone, you know, connected to the community or have the American experience. I don't, but I'm Swedish, and I found this in my town, in my country, in my language. So that's made it, you know, possible for me to take on this story. However, I wasn't, you know, stupid, so I realized I have to have, you know, some American partner that I could, you know, trust not to make a fool out of myself. So I heard a rumor that Mr. Danny Glover had this production company. I was in New York, knocked on their door, and they said, no, sorry, this is not how it works in America, maybe in Sweden, but you can't just knock on a door. But I said, oh, wait a minute, can you check this out? And they did, and they were here, oh, this is great, we want to be a part of it. So I showed them some of the stuff, and then we talked for a couple of hours, and then they helped me through the process. So it was great. I have, you know, the deepest respect for Mr. Glover.
There was some very interesting footage with Stokely Carmichael from 1967. So he was a young man. He was in his mid-20s. Yeah. And the Swedish interviewer is in his living room with Stokely and his mother. And finally, Stokely says, and all of this is shown, he's like, do you want me to continue the interview? She says, sure. He gets up on the couch and interviews his own mother. And basically,
yeah,
it's just such a fascinating moment.
Yeah.
Especially observing those two different generations.
Yes, you're exactly spot on, because what, you know, you can see the difference in the generation. I think you all have to remember that Stokely, Carmichael, Angela Davis, the Black Panthers, they all came from education. They all came from university. They were the first in their families, first generation to get an education. And they got an education because they were so bright, you know. And you can see that, you know, in that scene very obviously. His mother is this beautiful and charming and warm person. Actually, she just died last summer. And I sent this stuff to the family, and I received a letter back. I never received a nicer letter. They're absolutely great, all of them.
We're talking about the film, The Black Power Mixtape, which is opening this week at the CCA here in Santa Fe. I think the point that you're making about the education of these people in the Black Power movement is so interesting and so important, something that has perhaps really been underplayed by the American media, or certainly the mainstream American media. But I mean, Stokely Carmichael, he went to Bronx High School of Science. Angela Davis, as you point out in the film, was considered one of the brightest students that her college professors ever had, and went to Europe and was a star there. And the interview that you do with her was just so moving to me in its clarity and simplicity and intelligence.
I think I think that these people, Stokely Carmichael, Black Panthers, they are the most, the brightest of the generation, and they are inspiring people. So you can agree or disagree with them, but they are still inspiring, you know, personality that we all could, you know, gain momentum from. You know, I really adore them and I respect them, and they they could inspire you to do whatever you want, and they did that to me. I think you should regard them as, you know, the brightest of their generation. It's very important to keep them, keep the memory alive while we have it, you know. So.
Well, Angela Davis was, I think, the one person in your film who was both shown in the original footage, and she was a contemporary commentator. What was it? Yes. What's she like now? What was it like to work with her?
It was so great because, you know, she's this brilliant person, and she started out, you know, as an intellectual and was working for prisoners' rights in California, and then everything happened to her. She became a symbol. But she still do the same thing. She works for prisoners' rights in California, and that's so strong. And actually, I felt ashamed when I met her because she's so bright, and I read her books, and, you know, and she's so intelligent, you know. And I had the image that she should be, like, strict or, you know, not uptight, but, you know, strict or to the point. And then I discovered she was this warm personality, and she cracked jokes. She was funny. I felt ashamed that I had an image of her being strict just because she's intelligent. So I felt ashamed. But we had a great time. And I mean, my respect to Angela Davis is beyond everything.
It's interesting because the movie obviously gives one a chance to contemplate on one's own, and also listening to the contemporary commentators of today, what has changed and what has not changed? And, I mean, everybody who sees it is going to form their own opinion about it, but what did you come away with?
Well, you know, not being an American, and I couldn't tell what the difference from now, but everybody who sees it that was, you know, in America at the time, say, so many things have changed. It's amazing change. But still, we have a lot. America has a lot of things to do still. And when we're talking about education, maybe the educational system is the one recently, the recent 10 years, not only America, but it being, you know, kind of put in reverse, I don't know, but the segregation within the schools and within the educational system is a huge problem. But, you know, overall, you know, it's been a tremendous development in America, but the work is not done by far, of course.
Well, and when you look at the situation of prisoners, and there was Angela Davis working on prison conditions in the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah.
She was in prison herself for a while, was completely acquitted.
Yeah.
And then you look at the situation we have now, where conditions may or may not be better, but the number of black people in prison is higher than ever.
Yes. I mean, that situation...